Ben Graham, the legendary investor, he gave us this core idea about markets, didn't he? In the short term, it's a voting machine, but long term, it's a weighing machine.
That's the classic quote.
And if that's true, then what we're seeing now with zero data expiration options, zero DTEs, well, that looks like the ultimate modern voting machine running at full tilt.
It's an explosive analogy, yeah, because the sheer speed and the scale of this, well, this voting are genuinely like nothing we've seen before.
How big are we talking?
Well, look, the exchanges introduced Tuesday and Thursday expiries back in 2022. Since then, SPX zero DTE trading has grown, believe it or not, more than fivefold.
Five times. Wow.
Yeah. We're talking average daily volume jumping from around 388,000 contracts in early 2022 to almost 2 million contracts, 1.98 million to be precise, by the start of 2025.
That's just an incredible adoption rate. And it means this product now, it kind of dominates the index option space.
Absolutely. Recently, zero DTE options made up a record share, over 60% of the total SPX volume. Think about that.
Over 60%. So to put the size of this daily vote in perspective for you listening, we're looking at instruments that represent over $1 trillion in notional value.
Right.
Traded every single day.
And expiring within hours, sometimes minutes.
So our goal today is really to figure out what this, you know, ultra short-term trading frenzy actually means for the wider market structure. Is it changing things?
Well, what it tells us pretty clearly is that the market is structurally shifting. You see traders actively looking for ways to make these tactical, highly efficient bets on the shortest possible time horizons.
Okay, so let's get down to brass tacks. For anyone maybe not totally familiar, we're talking options that literally expire the same day they're traded.
Exactly.
This isn't some year-long view.
Yeah.
It's a bet on what happens today.
Yeah, they exist for just hours, maybe even minutes in some cases. And while index options used to have only certain monthly or weekly expiries, getting daily expiries Monday through Friday on major indices like the S&P 500, the SPX.
That was the key change.
That was fully implemented by mid-2022. And it basically created the runway for this massive volume growth we're seeing.
But why this specific vehicle? Why not just trade, say, S&P futures or ETFs if you want short-term exposure?
Mm-hmm. Two main drivers, really. First is the precision you get in managing risk. It's unparalleled. You can express a view for literally one single day and only that day.
Like if I think the market's rallying this afternoon.
You can bet specifically on that. And if you're wrong, the risk is completely gone by 4 p.m. when it expires. Done.
Okay, that's clear. And the second driver?
It's the cost. Because there's so little time premium left, these options are incredibly cheap in dollar terms. They offer maximum leverage for a, you know, minimal upfront cash outlay.
Right, which brings us straight into the Greeks, doesn't it? Because when you're dealing with a contract measured in hours, not months, you've got these two forces basically running at maximum velocity, theta and gamma.
That's absolutely right. Let's tackle theta first. That's time decay. For these near expiration options, especially the ones right at the money, theta is at its absolute largest.
The melting ice cube analogy comes to mind.
That's exactly it. We often call the premium on these options a melting ice cube, because if the option finishes out of the money by the close, that entire premium just evaporates. Poof, gone to zero.
And it melts faster towards the end of the day.
Oh yeah, that decay accelerates dramatically as 4 p.m. approaches. It's a rapidly wasting asset.
Okay, so if theta is the ice cube melting away fast, then gamma must be the dynamite stick, the accelerator.
Yeah, dynamite's a good way to put it. Gamma is the rate at which your position's sensitivity, the delta, accelerates. And it is extreme, particularly when that option is at the money.
It magnifies moves.
Massively. Think of gamma as volatility in your position's sensitivity. And at the money, zero DTE options delta. You know, its sensitivity to the index price moving, it can swing wildly. It might go from roughly 0.5 to nearly 1 or down to 0 with just a small price movement over a few hours.
Which makes a whole position incredibly leveraged, but also
inherently unstable. Highly unstable. A small market move can flip a moderately profitable contract into a huge winner, or, just as easily, into a total loss almost instantly.
So the real insight here is you're not just trading direction, you're trading the timing of that direction, down to the hour.
Precisely.
And what about Vega? The sensitivity to broader market volatility, like the VIX.
Vega is minimal in contrast. It really doesn't play much of a role. Because the contract expires today, a big change in implied volatility, you know, the market's fear gauge, it has very little impact on the zero DTE options price.
So it's all immediate price action.
Almost entirely. The price movement is driven by delta and, crucially, gamma. not by longer-term sentiment or multi-day vol forecasts.
Okay, that paints a picture of a very tactical, very leveraged environment. Which leads us to, who are the voters here? Who's doing all this trading? We know retail options activity surged, you know, post-pandemic, zero commissions, easier access.
Right, Robinhood recently enabling index options, for example.
Exactly. Okay. So who's powering this $1 trillion daily vote?
Yeah.
Is it mostly retail?
The retail segment is definitely dominating the volume, yeah. Our data suggests retail makes up somewhere between 50% and 60% of the total SPX 0DTE trading.
50 to 60%, that's huge.
And the growth curve there is just massive. Retail average daily volume grew over 7 times from early 2020 to early 2025. It's well over 1 million contracts traded daily just by retail now.
7 times. And institutions.
Institutional volume grew slower, but still substantially. It increased about 4 times over that same period, reaching around 820,000 contracts daily. Still significant, but retail growth outpaced it heavily.
Okay, a 7-fold increase in retail volume. That really speaks volumes about, I guess, the democratization of this kind of short-term leverage. What about how they trade? Do institutions and retail approach the trading day differently?
We do see a distinct difference, particularly in timing. Institutional investors, they tend to be very aggressive opening positions early in the day.
Like right at the bell.
Pretty much. About 18% of their volume hits the market in the first 30 minutes after the open at 9:30.
Okay. And retail?
Retail investors show more of a U-shaped volume curve throughout the day. They're active at the start, yes, maybe around 12% of their opening volume in the first half hour, but they're also very active at the end of the day.
The closing rush?
Right, another 12% or so rushing in during the last 30 minutes before the 4 p.m. close.
So generalizing a bit, maybe institutions are trying to capture early momentum, while retail traders are perhaps clocking out of their day jobs and jumping in for that final hour of volatility.
That seems like a fair interpretation of the timing patterns, yeah. Strategy-wise, though, they're actually fairly similar. Both use outright calls and puts for about half their trades, roughly 50-52%.
Any key differences in strategy types?
Minor ones. Institutional players use slightly more vertical spreads, about 33.4% of their activity compared to 27.6% for retail. Retail traders, on the other hand, lean a bit more heavily on multi-leg strategies like iron condors, about 7.7%, and butterflies, around 3.5%. Those are quite popular ways to collect premium with that defined risk profile we talked about.
Interesting. Now, we saw some pretty high volatility recently, right? Intraday swings that apparently reached levels not seen since the 2008 crisis on some metrics.
That's right. Some sharp moves.
When the market gets really turbulent like that, what happens to the retail vote? Do they tend to double down or do they pull back?
They absolutely pulled back. It was quite noticeable. During that period of turmoil, retail traders actually reduced their share of the 0DTE volume significantly. It dropped by about 10 percentage points, from around 57% down to 47%.
So institutions stepped in to take the other side?
Essentially, yes. Institutions absorbed more of the volume during that high-stress period. It suggests retail traders tend to get risk-averse when intraday chaos really picks up.
But did they stay out?
No, not at all. As soon as that intense volatility normalized, their volume share surged right back up, quickly exceeding 60% again. So they're sensitive to sudden, violent swings, but they seem eager to return once things calm down.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit to the big question, the one that probably keeps regulators up at night. Does this constant churn, this $1 trillion daily notional volume in 0DTEs, does it actually cause market swings? Is the voting machine driving the car, or is it just along for the ride?
Yeah, this is the critical point, isn't it? The consensus view, and it's based on pretty extensive data analysis, suggests that high gross volume doesn't necessarily equal high systemic risk.
Why not? The numbers are just staggering.
Because what really matters for market impact is the net positioning. And the SPX 0DTE flow, day in and day out, has been remarkably balanced between buyers and sellers almost every single day.
Meaning the dealers, the market makers, aren't building up huge directional bets.
Exactly. It means the market makers' net gamma exposure, their overall sensitivity to accelerating price moves, has generally been minimal. They're facilitating flow, but not taking massive one-sided risk themselves most of the time.
Minimal how, though? Can we quantify that impact?
Well, researchers looked at some of the most volatile days recently. And even on those days, the hedging activity by market makers related specifically to zero DTE options represented, at its peak, a tiny fraction, just 0.2% of the total S&P futures notional volume being traded.
0.2%, that sounds small.
It is relatively small. And crucially, on many of those high vol days, the market makers were actually found to be net long gamma.
Which means?
Which means their hedging activity, buying when the market dipped, selling when it rallied, was actively working to dampen volatility, not make it worse.
So the opposite of the tail wagging the dog fear.
On most normal days, yes. The overall impact on the underlying index seems relatively contained, sometimes even stabilizing. The system seems to be absorbing this flow quite well most of the time.
Okay, most of the time. But you mentioned balance. We need to talk about the one day a week where maybe that balance gets seriously tested. Fridays.
Friday is the weekly grand finale, as some call it.
Why is that?
Because it's the one day where the daily zero DTE index options on SPX expire at the exact same time as the weekly expirations of options on hundreds of individual stocks and ETFs right across the market.
A convergence of expirations.
A huge convergence. And this simultaneous unwinding of hedges across many, many different products, especially into the 4 p.m. close, it can lead to sharp, sometimes erratic, end-of-day price fluctuations. You hear traders talk about pinning around certain strike prices.
You're driving that.
It's largely market makers frantically trying to flatten their books. They absolutely do not want to carry unwanted exposure, especially in single stocks from assigned options over the weekend. So there's a rush to close out positions.
So that definitely adds short-term volatility at the close on Fridays.
Oh, for sure. It's a well-known technical flow dynamic. But the key is it's usually temporary. The market effectively resets itself by Monday morning.
Right. Okay, given all this complexity, the speed, the Greeks, the Friday finale, what makes SPX the overwhelming choice for zero DTE traders?
SPX options use European-style settlement.
Meaning you can't exercise them early.
Correct. No risk of early assignment. And critically, they are cash settled.
Okay, let me translate that for maybe some active traders listening. If I sell a put option on the SPY ETF and it finishes in the money, I might get assigned, right? I could wake up Monday owning 100 shares of SPY per contract I sold, maybe when I didn't want to.
Precisely. That's physical settlement.
Yeah.
You might have to buy, if short a put, or sell, if short a call, 100 shares of the underlying ETF or stock. That brings overnight risk, gap risk, into the next day.
But with SPX options.
That never happens. If your short SPX put expires in the money at 4 p.m., you simply pay the difference between the strike price and the settlement price in cash. That's it.
No shares change hands.
None. The trade is settled in cash, the books are clean, position gone by the next trading day.
That overnight risk mitigation alone sounds huge. But wait, there's also a massive, powerful tax incentive for using index options like SPX, isn't there? Especially for high-volume traders.
This is arguably the ultimate efficiency driver. It's huge. Broad-based index options, specifically SPX, but also others like NDX and RUT qualify under the U.S. tax code as Section 1256 contracts.
Section 1256. Okay, and why is that designation so advantageous?
Practically speaking, it means that 60% of any gains you make on these contracts are treated as long-term capital gains, and only 40% are treated as short-term capital gains.
Regardless of how long you held the option.
Regardless of the holding period, you could literally buy and sell an SPX zero DTE option within 10 minutes.
And still get the 60-40 treatment.
And 60% of that gain is taxed at the typically lower long-term capital gains rate. This significantly reduces the effective tax burden for active day traders compared to trading, say, zero DTE options on SPY or an individual stock.
Those would be taxed.
If held for less than a year, which virtually all zero DTE trades are, those gains would be taxed 100% at the higher short-term capital gains rate, which is usually your ordinary income tax rate.
Wow. Okay. So if you're a high-frequency, high-volume trader, the SPX zero DTE product offers maximum leverage. You get cash-settled certainty with no overnight stock risk, and you get a massive tax break all rolled into one.
It's almost perfectly engineered for sophisticated, high-frequency market engagement. That tax efficiency is, without doubt, a huge driver behind the overwhelming dominance SPX holds in this ultra-short-dated options world.
Okay, so let's try and synthesize this. What this exploration tells us is the explosive growth of zero DTE trading really confirms a deep structural shift. A shift towards micro-time frame market engagement. It's driven by leverage, precision, and especially that powerful SPX tax advantage.
It really is Ben Graham's voting machine running at its absolute fastest possible speed, casting, you know, over $1 trillion in daily bets on where the market goes in the next few hours.
And because of that potent mix of high gamma and high theta.
Right, the acceleration and the decay.
These instruments are incredibly efficient tools for short-term tactical views, but they are utterly unforgiving.
Extremely unforgiving. Once a position moves against you, that theta clock is rapidly accelerating your losses, and gamma might be amplifying them. There is virtually no time for error, no time for the market to come back in your favor.
Which explains why we see that discipline, that 95% using defined risk strategies.
It mandates extreme risk management, yeah.
Okay. So ultimately, the data we have right now suggests the vast majority of these huge $1 trillion daily zero DTE flows are currently being absorbed by balanced hedging, preventing immediate systemic chaos on most days.
That seems to be the case based on the analysis so far.
However, institutional strategists, the big banks, they've clearly modeled scenarios, right? They've warned that a surprise, large, truly one-directional market shock, some unexpected geopolitical event, a flash crash trigger, that could still potentially overwhelm the balancing act.
Yes. The concern is that a big enough, fast enough, one-way move could trigger rapid, one-sided hedging flows from dealers who suddenly find their books unbalanced. That could add tens of billions in compulsory selling or buying pressure very quickly.
So here's the final thought to leave you with. Does the sheer, persistent size of this $1 trillion daily voting potential, does it mean that our financial system is now perhaps always just one major unforeseen shock event away from a potential self-amplifying crisis? A crisis driven, ironically, by the very shortest dated financial instruments ever created.